Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Nectar of Instruction. Today we'll be discussing the last verse, that is the 11th verse. The 9th and 10th verse discussed the topmost place and the topmost devotee. Now both these analyses are combined together to talk about both of them in offering their combined mercy through the service of Radhakund. So let us look at this particular text. So here we see, before we look at the text, let's look at the translation of the verse. Krishnochai pranay vasati preyasibhyo piradha kundam chasya munibhir abhitas tadrug eva vedhai yat preshthair apyalam usulabham kim punar bhakti bhajam tat premenam sakrut apisaraha snatur avishkaroti. So, Krishnochai. Uchya means high. So, Krishnochai, a very high object of love for Krishna, pranaya vasatihi. So, the object of vasatihi is vast, to reside. So, pranaya vasati is where Krishna's, where love resides, the object of love. Preyasi bhyaha. So, preyasi, priyasi. Priyasi means lovers. Ebhyo means among them. Preyasi bhyo pi radha. So, among all of Krishna's lovers, Radha is the highest. Uchai pranaya vasati. Kundam chasya and her kunda, munibhir abhitas tad, munibhir abhitas. The munis have stated, munis feel in all respects, tadrug eva, it is similarly, vidahai. So the munis describe, just as Radha is the topmost of the gopis, similarly, her kunda is the topmost among all places. Yat preshthair apyalam asulabham. Yat preshthair. So preshthai, preshtha means dear, most advanced. Yeah. Those are most dear to Krishna. Those are most advanced. So for even the most advanced devotee, apyalam asulabham. It is difficult to obtain. Kim punar bhakti bhajam. So even for those who are advanced devotees, it's difficult to obtain this place. And what to speak of those who are just engaging in devotional service. Tat premedam. That prem, sakrut api saraha, that love of Godhead, saraha is the river, snatuhu, so one who bathes, snatu, snan, so one who bathes in the holy place, avishkaroti, it arouses. So by bathing in that holy place, arouses premedam sakrut. Premedam even arouses that love, sakrut, even once bathing. So let's look at the translation. Of the many objects of favour, delight, and of all the lovable damsels of Rajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most treasured object of Krishna's love. And in every respect, her divine kunda is described by great sages as similarly dear to him. Undoubtedly, Radha Kunda is very rarely attained even by the great devotees. Therefore, it is even more difficult for ordinary devotees to attain. If one simply bathes once within those holy waters, one's pure love of Krishna is fully aroused. So let's look at the overview of the text. Here we will see that. What is the speciality of Radha Kund? So, serving Radha Kund is the theme of this verse. It's not just bathing in Radha Kund or living in Radha Kund, it is serving Radha Kund. So, why Radha Kund? Because it belongs to Radharani, who is the most beloved gopi. She's as and that place, Radha Kund, is as dear to Krishna as Radha herself, and there are unlimited glories. The sacredness of it can scarcely be comprehended by us, and it is very rare to attain. Let's look at these points one by one. The scriptures extol the glories of God and those associated with God. Now, when we hear those glories, we sometimes may think that, how do we make sense of this? So that is through service. And when we go to Radha Kund, it is not to just see with our eyes. In fact, going to Holy Dham is not for sightseeing purposes. It is for purifying for the purposes of purification. When we purify ourselves, the spiritual vision will awaken and then we'll be able to see. We discussed in an earlier class how text scriptural description plus sensory perception, then it's complemented with inner spiritual revelation that helps us to see the dham actually. So till then, till that spiritual revelation happens, we go to the dham primarily for purification. So when we talk about Radha Kund, the attitude has to be of service. In the Bhakta Samvit Sindhu quotes a Puranic verse, it is said that Atah Shri Krishna Namadi Nabhaved Grahya Mindriyai Sevon Mukhehi Jevhadav Swayameva Spuratyadha Atah Shri Krishna Namadi. The name and other things of Krishna Nabhaved Grahya Mindriyai, that the gross senses cannot understand them, they are not perceivable to the gross senses. Sevon Mukhe Hijivadav. When we serve Krishna, beginning with the tongue, Adav is beginning with Jivha. And what do? Sevo Unmukha. So we are all currently Vimukha from Krishna. Mukha is face, V is Viruddha Rupena. So Krishna is there right next to us in the heart, but we are turned away. We have become Vimukha from Krishna. So because we are seeing away from Krishna, we are seeing material things into the spiritual. So right now we can't perceive the spiritual even when it manifests in the material world. Our vision is glued, riveted, locked in the material. So therefore, we need to free it. And the way to free it is by service. By rendering service to Krishna with our material senses, with our material mind and intelligence, with our material talents, and trying to invest as much of our heart, our consciousness as possible in it, we become purified. So, seva unmukha. So, when Krishna sees that we are trying to turn towards Him, then swayameva, by His own free will, spuratyadaha, He reveals Himself to us. Spurati means spontaneous remembrance. So, Krishna gives a spontaneous remembrance to us by His own free will, when He sees that we are sincerely trying to serve Him. And then our consciousness becomes unglued, unriveted, unlocked from matter. And then we are able to perceive spiritual reality. So, the service attitude is very important even when we go to Radha Kund. Sometimes people think that just by going to a place like Radha Kund, we become spiritually advanced. And that's why people sometimes are very eager to stay in Radha Kund. And then when they tell others that, oh, I'm staying in Radha Kund, oh, you're so advanced, you left the world, you're staying in the most sacred place. So Bhakti Sanskrit Thakur did not entertain such pretentiousness. He said that for people who live in Radha Kund but who have not controlled their senses, and especially if they give in to immoral activities at Radha Kund, then that same Radha Kund can become Narak Kund for them. So instead of taking them Pradharani, the immoral activities if somebody does over there, that can have disastrous results. That can take one to Narak. So generally sinful activities are bad, but sinful activities performed at a holy place, they are even worse. And sinful activities performed at a holy place, while one is pretending to be a holy person, they are the worst. Anybody performing sinful activities anywhere is bad. So, if somebody goes to a holy place and performs sinful activities, that is much worse. But if somebody is externally acting as a very advanced devotee, and at that time, doing immoral activities in Radha Kund, that is extremely, grievously, monstrously sinful. And the results of that will also be very grave. Of course, as sadhakas, we are not just paranoid about karmic reactions. Our greater fear is that we don't want to displease Krishna, we don't want to displease our spiritual master and the Vaishnavas and spirit and Srila Prabhupada. That's why we avoid sinful activities. But we have to remember also that there are consequences for our actions. So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur jolts us out of our devotional fantasy that just going to Radha Kund will be something wonderful. Yes, it can be, but it has to be with proper consciousness. Otherwise, improper consciousness can make Radha Kund into Narak Kund for us. So actually, it is not just, this is not something theoretical. it has unfortunately happened in our sampradaya that there are people who somehow pervertedly claim that the pastimes of Radha and Krishna are not just to be contemplated and contemplated only in the most advanced stages of devotion. They think that those pastimes are to actually be enacted. And who will enact us? We will enact it. So, generally there are different approaches in spirituality. So the Vedantic approaches, especially the Upanishadic approaches, separate matter and spirit. This is matter, this is spirit. So, reject matter and focus on spirit. That focuses on meditation, contemplation, analysis, and then discrimination and rejection of matter. So, that is one way. Now, the bhakti way is to use matter for the service of spirit and therefore to utilize the spirit. So, in bhakti, we use various material things in the service of Krishna. And by such service of Krishna, we become purified. We become gradually elevated. While we are doing this, there is a danger that not all matter can be used in Krishna's service. Certain matter can entangle us, and that's why we have to be cautious, very cautious. The point is Yukta Vairagya, as Rupa Goswami says, that renunciation is important. Only when we have some Vairagya, then we can do Yukta. We can actually engage it in Krishna's service. So that's why, although we say matter can be used in Krishna's service, but we still have regulative principles. And certain forms of activities are to be given up because they will drag us down. We won't be able to do them and go to Krishna towards them. However, there is, apart from the bhakti tradition, there is another tradition, which is the tantra tradition. This is the left-hand tantra. So deity worship is called as right-hand tantra. Right-hand tantra is auspicious. Left-hand tantra is widely considered as inauspicious. Baldevi Devotion talks about it in the Bhagavad Gita. In the 16th chapter, he talks about Ashuchi Vratha, unclean vows. So, in this left-hand tantra, now it is actually a huge deviation from whatever is there in the Vedic tradition. And even the Vedic tradition, what is given is for people who are very much in Tamoguna. Right-hand tantra is deity worship. Krishna manifests through matter and allows us to worship Him and serve Him. So in left-hand tantra, and similarly Krishna manifests also as the various avatars, and He allows us to remember Him and those who are there at that time to see Him, to interact with Him, and in that way we can turn towards Him. So left-hand tantra, the idea is any matter can be used in Krishna's service. And this is a very distorted understanding which has been thoroughly rejected by the Vaishnava Acharyas. The idea is that actually matter, everything that is there in this world is simply the dance of matter and spirit. So matter is considered to be Prakriti and spirit is Purusha, and the Purusha is considered to be Shiva and matter is considered to be Shakti. So the whole idea is that whole of creation is the dance of Shiva and Shakti. And their idea is, in Tantra it's a very distorted idea, that by the union of Shiva and Shakti, spiritual realization comes about. So these people have the idea that by engaging in sex, sex is basically, they consider that Shiva and Shakti are entering into us, and when we engage in this activity, actually they are enjoying through us. Now our bodies are material, our bodies are filled with foul substances, and this is a distorted idea. So people think, so they do sinful activities, and then they say that this is actually religious. And although this idea has been strongly rejected by Vaishnava Acharyas, in some time in history, these came into Vaishnavism also. And some people started saying that when we perform when we do Rasdila, actually Krishna is entering into us, and Radharani and the Gopis are entering into these women, and we are performing pastimes. So, Prabhupada would say this is not Ras Leela, this is Raskal Leela. So, this is just very, very degraded conception. And now, there is an understanding that, for example, when some, generally in Vraja, there's some dramas, so children perform the dramas. So, some small children will be dressed as Krishna, some will be dressed as Radharani and the Gopis, and they perform Ras Leela. And at that time, when those children are devotionally trained and they are devotionally inclined, they are devotionally cultured, then during the time of the pastime, those children are often treated like Radha and Krishna only. So the idea is, at that time when the Rasalila is performed, Radha Krishna, they are so happy to see this pastime happening that they themselves manifest. And the people who watch these pastimes, they become transported to a higher level of reality by remembrance of Krishna through the watching of those pastimes. So generally speaking, in such pastimes, there are only males. Even in the gopis are played by small children. Sometimes if their children are not very small, then sometimes the girls might be there. But their dancing is purely aesthetic. And there's nothing more than that. And there is nothing immoral or unholy that is ever allowed in such things. So some devotees in the early days of ISKCON went to Vrindavan, saw this happening, and they decided we'll do this also. So then Srila Prabhupada was in San Francisco, then Los Angeles, one of those two places. So then and Prabhupada said, we are going to do a drama tomorrow. And then they said, so two devotees had dressed as Radha and Krishna. And when they dressed as Radha and Krishna, all the other devotees started offering obeisance. Other devotees started doing aarti of them. And Prabhupada sat very quietly, did not speak anything. But he watched the whole drama. Then he went back, and next day in the morning, Bhagavatam class, Prabhupada said, we should not do this. He said, you know, this can take us in the wrong direction, and we should not do this in ISKCON. So, certain people may perform some aartis and things like that, but we shouldn't start worshipping those people. It's possible that Krishna manifests some amsha of his bhav so that the drama can happen effectively. But Srila Prabhupada said that this can take us in the wrong direction, and that's we don't want imitation of the exalted pastimes. So our acharyas have time and time again cautioned us against this. So Radha Kund has tremendous potency, but also requires tremendous purity. Otherwise, if you go there with impure hearts, we can be dragged down. This unfortunately happened many times, and that's why our acharyas are very cautious that we have the proper consciousness when we go to Radha Kund. Srila Prabhupada even went once at the extreme of saying, don't bathe in Radha Kund if you're going to be so frivolous. So Prabhupada was so cautious that leave alone immoral activities, even just casual swimming and tossing of water and playing in the water of Radha Kund, Prabhupada felt that it's inappropriate. So of course Prabhupada did not want an all-time ban on the bathing in Radha Kund. You know, Srila Prabhupada's words have authorities in a hierarchy. So in the front matter of Vedavis, Jayadvaita Maharaj explained, this is generally understood by all ISKCON scholars that, you know, Prabhupada's Vani has come to us in four ways. There is this purport, which is the most universal, which he put time, thought, and he wrote them down. Then there are his lectures, which he gave. They are a little more contextual, spoken to the people who are there at that time. Then there are the conversations which he had with a group of people at various times. And there are letters which he wrote to various disciples. Now, everything that a spiritual master, that Prabhupada has spoken is valuable. But still, they have a hierarchy because the letters are most context dependent. They are written for a particular person. Conversations are a little less context dependent as a group of people, but still there is a context. Lectures are also contextual. Now, purports are among these the most universal. And Srila Prabhupada considered his purports the most important contribution, a legacy that he was leaving for posterity. So now, when we look at this hierarchy, Srila Prabhupada in one conversation told devotees, don't bathe in Radha Kund. But he has told repeatedly in purports like this, and that is mentioned in the Guru by Shastra and Sadhus, the glory of Radha Kund. So it is not that we have to take that one statement out of context and absolutize a ban for ISKCON devotees in bathing in Radha Kund. But at the same time, we have to take that one statement seriously and understand that we can't be casual, we can't be frivolous about that which is precious, an opportunity to actually bathe in Radha Kund. So now it is said here that even by one's bathing, one will gain love of Krishna. So we may say, I've gone and bathed over there, I'll go and bathe over there. Will in and of that itself give us love for Krishna? You have to understand that in scriptures, whenever anything is spoken, there is value to it, there is potency to it. At the same time, in real life, it is not one principle alone that applies. There are multiple principles that come together. This happens even in law. You know, for example, if one person kills another person, that is considered to be murder. But if one person kills another person, and that happens to be in a war, and that other person is the enemy soldier, then this person may get an award for doing that. Or if one person kills another person, and then the person who is killing happens to be a thief, and the person who is in the house is trying to protect the house, it's a different situation. Or if the person who is killed is a person who is trying to molest a woman, and the person who kills the woman in defense of her chastity, then that is also a very different situation. So there is one rule, that one principle, that if you kill, they have to be punished. But then there can be so many other circumstances which also have to take into consideration. So in real life, it is very rare that one law which is made in the law codes will map into reality as it is. So the mapping of law onto reality involves taking into account the circumstances. And those circumstances bring into picture other factors. There may be other laws also. You know, so similarly, the scriptural statements are true. The law is true. But now just because A kills B, then B should be hanged. Say A kills B, then A should be hanged. That's the law, say. Then, but still not every time in the court, A will be hanged for that. Because there are other factors which the court will take into consideration. So similarly, the scriptures give us promises. The scriptures talk about the glories of certain holy places. And those holy places, those glories are definitely there. The potency is there. But along with there are other factors. So, now why is it that Rupa Goswami here is talking about this bathing of Radha, bathing in Radha Kund only in the 11th verse? If just by bathing in Radha Kund one can develop love for Krishna, then he doesn't have to write the full Upadeshamrita at all. You can just write one statement, go and bathe in Radha Kund. And maybe you can repeat it in 11 verses. Go and bathe in Radha Kund. Go and bathe in Radha Kund. Go and bathe in Radha Kund. He doesn't do that. He gives a whole series of texts, each filled with very profound wisdom. And though that series of texts is actually helping us move forward progressively, one by one, and to come to the understanding of what Radha Kund is. So through all those verses, we become purified by applying that instruction, the Upadesh given in the Upadesh Amrit's previous verses. We become purified, and after we are purified, we are devotionally prepared in our consciousness. Then when we bathe in Radha Kund, and then we become stimulated, energized, electrified with love for Krishna. Avish karoti, as the verse says. So, there is a process that has to be followed. So, Rupa Goswami doesn't just put this at one place arbitrarily. It is at the climax of the whole book. So, that means, yes, the Radha Kund has the potency. But at the same time, there are other principles which also apply. And when we understand those principles and apply those principles, then we can actually get the full benefit. So therefore, these promises are not exaggerations. At the same time, we cannot use those promises as bargaining chips to demand from Krishna. Say, I bathe it now, I must get love award. No, that demanding attitude is antithetical to devotion. In fact, it will bury our devotion in the graveyard if we have the demanding attitude. So we have to have a submissive, in fact, begging attitude. And that begging attitude, coupled with a systematic process of purification, will eventually enable us to relish the glories of the Radha Kund. And by bathing there in such a devotional attitude, we will awaken love of God, love for Krishna, as is described. So now, let's move forward and discuss about the aspect of Madhurya Bhakti in terms of what it is. So we said that, you know, Radha Kund is so exalted. Now why is it so exalted? Because Radharani is so exalted. Now why is Radharani so exalted? Because she has the highest love for Krishna. And now, what exactly is the nature of the love of Radha and Krishna? And how is that love different from the, entirely different from the immorality that goes on in male-female relationships in this world? There is at the very least sensuality, and sometimes there is even immorality that goes on. So what is that exactly? How do we understand it? So first and foremost, like we discussed in the earlier class, now we have to learn through spiritual vision, based on scriptural understanding, that we shouldn't see Radha and Krishna just as males and females. We should see them as devotees and the Lord. When we see them with this vision, then we focus on the devotional interactions, not on what we may easily mistake to be sensual. So, whatever is present in this world is, in its original and pure form, present in the spiritual world. Of course, there are many, as I said, the original and pure is present in the spiritual world. So there may be much in this world which will be distorted, which will be perverted. And that is not present in the spiritual world. So what is present in the spiritual world is pure and it is transcendental, but at the same time it is present. So now what do we mean by this? That the Bhagavad Gita says this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. So throughout the various spiritual traditions of the world, various great religions of the world, it's told that the male-female attraction is potentially dangerous and one has to be careful. Otherwise, this attraction can drag one away from the spiritual path. At the same time, the world's other religious traditions do not give any explanation of where this male-female attraction comes from. Why is it there here in this world? That is unfortunately not explained. So because of that, this is a temptation and you have to keep it under regulation through marriage. And beyond that, nothing more. And that's all that there is. So, it's like a fiat. You have to follow this. But there is no philosophical, logical explanation of why this is present at all. So, only in the Vedic tradition, the spiritual reality is revealed in its extraordinary splendor and flavor. So, in that splendor and flavor of the spiritual reality, It is explained that the relationship that we have in the world are present in their original and pure form. So God manifests in a male form as Krishna, and actually Radharani is God himself manifesting in a female form. Radha Krishna Eka Atma Dui Deha Dhari. Radha and Krishna are one person. Dui Deha Dhari. They manifest as two. Anyonyana Vilasakari. For what purpose? For the purpose of reciprocating love. Anyonya Vilasakari. So when they reciprocate love like this, what is the purpose of reciprocating love? It is Vilas. They get great joy, supreme joy by it. So why does Krishna manifest one as two? Because through that he reciprocates love. And the love that he reciprocates is not because of a sense of incompleteness. Now in this world, a man feels incomplete without a woman feels incomplete without a man. Of course, when two incompletes come together, they don't become complete, they become incomplete squared. Why? Because, you know, they are themselves small parts. They have to unite with the supreme whole, that is Krishna, so that then they'll become complete. But that doesn't happen. Of course, if the complete is in the whole is the center, then things are much better. But still, that is not the relationship that is lasting, that is eternal. So we want a relationship with Krishna. So that's what will satisfy the heart completely. And to get to that relationship, we need to have proper philosophical and scriptural understanding. So, scriptures describe that Krishna, when he forms relationship, it is not because of any sense of incompleteness. It is because he wants to share his completeness. Just as a person who is filled with happiness may want to go and do something, not in order to become happy, but to share that happiness, to delight in that happiness. So, this raises a fundamental question, why does God do anything at all? Now, if God is perfect and complete, as we discussed in Ishopanishad, then why does God have to do anything? So, that's why in the Western tradition, there were theologians like many Greek philosophers, they had their own theology, conception of God, and they said, their idea was that God should be like a frozen perfection. Frozen perfection means that, you know, when somebody is making a painting, so at that time, slowly as the painting is being made, the image comes up. And then as the painting comes closer and closer to its perfection, to its zenith, then the painting becomes more and more beautiful. But at a particular point, the painting becomes excellent. Now, one dab less, and the painting is not so good. And one dab more, and again the painting is not so good. But the painting has to be stopped at a particular point. And when the painting is frozen at that point, then the painting is perfect. So their idea was, if God is perfect, then if he does anything, then that, why will he want to do anything? Because we do something because we want something. So then, God, if he does something, then he will become imperfect. But God is not imperfect. God is perfect. So therefore, he will not do anything. Because he doesn't need to do anything. And if he does something, that doing something will make him imperfect. Therefore, the idea is God will not do anything. And therefore, God has to be like a frozen perfection. A frozen perfection means that God is just perfect, eternally perfect, and he doesn't do anything. Now, such a conception of perfection may be theoretically correct, but it is practically unsound. And it is actually emotionally unappealing. You know, God who forever stands in the perfect pose, and that's all he does. How attractive will it be to live eternally with such a God? Yes, God is all attractive, and we can live eternally with him like that also. But what about God's perspective? Is God meant to do nothing but stand in a perfect pose for all of eternity? No, the Vedic scriptures understand that actually the perfection of God is in some entirely different sense. It is the perfection of love. And love by itself involves reciprocation. And there is dynamism in love. We do something for the beloved does something for us. And in that reciprocation there is joy. And the perfection of love is when everything else freezes, so that love can go on. Just like sometimes in the movie they show when a boy looks at a girl and a girl looks at a boy and they say their love is false sight. And what happens? They are looking at each other and they forget the whole world. They get lost in each other's eyes. So of course this is at a material level, it's fanciful. But the point is, we understand what is love. When there is love, then everything else freezes. That is the perfection of love. In fact, the perfection of love is even greater. Not only does everything else freeze, but the perfection of love will be when everything else contributes to the intensification of the love. Everything else contributes to the heightening, the sweetening, to the deepening of the love. And that is what happens in the spiritual world, in Krishna's abode. And what everything in Goloka Vrindavan contributes to Krishna's all-attractiveness. Not just Krishna's all-attractiveness, but Krishna's all-loving nature. Not just his all-loving nature, to his all-loving pastimes. So everything that Krishna does, everything that happens, everything that everyone does, it is all meant to add to the intensity of the love of Krishna and his devotees. So when Krishna acts, it is not because of any incompleteness. It is to share and relish the completeness of love. So that is the meaning of the word Leela. Leela means that Krishna performs pastimes for the sake of Leela. Some Prabhupada translates it pastime, some people translate as play, some try to love play. But the point is, Leela means it's entirely voluntary and it's performed for the sake of joy. So Ramanujacharya gives the example in his Shri Bhashya, this commentary in the Vedanta Sutra, that why will the Absolute Truth have to act at all? So he says the reason why the Absolute Truth acts, does any actions, is that this sort of actions are a recreation. So they are like a person who has his job, he works, and then after that he comes back, he may do some krida, he may do some play. But that is a leela. That a person is not obliged to do that play, but a plays for the sake of enjoyment. So when Krishna, when the Supreme Lord performs pastimes, that is a leela. That is like a krida done voluntarily, there is no obligation. When the scriptures say natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate, that there is nothing to be done by the Absolute Truth, that means it's all done for the sake of love. So when we look further, deeper into analogy, Baldev Vidyabhushan in Govinda Bhashya says, actually this example is good, but it is not perfect. Because even when a person plays, that play is done for some purpose. That is to enjoy. So the play is done. Okay, now I have done my work and now I come back and enjoy. I want to do something that I'll enjoy. So then the person starts playing. So playing is done to enjoy, but the Absolute Truth is himself filled with joy. He doesn't have to do anything to get enjoyment, like a person plays to get enjoyment. So he says a better example is dancing. You know, a person is over flooded with happiness, and when the person is over flooded with happiness, that person just stands up, jumps and starts dancing. Now dancing is not for the purpose of happiness. Dancing is the result of happiness. So similarly, in the case of the Absolute Truth, the leela that is performed is not for the purpose of happiness. It is the result of happiness. So Krishna is filled with so much love, so much joy, Atma Ram. He's self-satisfied. But that joy wants to overflow. Just like when a person is happy, the person is happy already, but wants to express that happiness. So when Krishna performs pastimes, it is not out of any incompleteness. It is not to relish incompleteness. It is not to gain some completeness, to move from incomplete to complete, but it is to relish the completeness by sharing that completeness. So that same Absolute Truth, Krishna, manifests as Radharani. And Krishna and Radharani together, they are God in male form and God in female form. And they perform pastimes. So it is Krishna relishing with his own expansion. And actually the gopis, various gopis are called as the expansions of Krishna. They are called as Parakaya Vyuha. Parakaya Vyuha means that they are the expansions in separate forms of Radharani. So they are expansions of Radharani, who is an expansion of Krishna. Of course, there is a difference in tattva, but still, the point is that they are all ultimately meant for Krishna's pastimes, and they reciprocate love with Krishna, and they delight in that. So, this has got nothing to do with the body-based, materially motivated, worldly love that we see in this at the sensual level here. It's simply the Absolute Truth relishing at a transcendental level. And when the Absolute Truth relishes in this way, the important point is that the Absolute Truth is simply acting out of selfless love. I said the absolute truth doesn't need anything from anyone. Although in the spiritual realm, there is yoga maya. And that yoga maya makes things happen in such a way that everything seems to be the sweetness of love being reciprocated. And for that sake, whatever is required is done. So Krishna can forget his divinity for the sake of love. And the gopis can forget that Krishna is God for the sake of love. And in this way, there can be a systematic reciprocation of love. So now, to heighten this love further, there is further excitement. So, when I said Krishna and gopis can forget Krishna's divinity, that means that the gopis, when yesterday we discussed how they saw Vishnu, they think Vishnu is God. Earlier we discussed that they offered obeisance and they asked, where is Krishna? Because they think Krishna not as God, they think of Krishna as our beloved. We want to love Him, we want to serve Him, we want to be with Him. That is their longing. So when they act in this way, they are aware of Krishna's Godhood, but that awareness has gone to the background of their consciousness. And the foreground of their consciousness is simply the intense, immense, intolerable longing to be with Krishna. And this is the perfection of love. As I said, the perfection of love is when everything else that will detract from the love is forgotten. So in the case of Krishna, everything else, including His Godhood, is forgotten so that the love can be intensified. And that love reaches its climax. And then it climaxes further. And it climaxes further. And it goes on for all of eternity. And Krishna and Radharani, of course, along with all the gopis, perform pastimes. So their love is entirely pure, entirely spiritual, entirely selfless. And it is the most cherished aspiration for us sadhakas. Now, whatever we are attracted to in this world, those emotions are shadow and shallow as compared to the vibrant, potent originals of which these are just sparks. So the Vedic scriptures help us understand that when we have male-female attraction here, this male-female attraction has to be given up because this is a reflection and there is a reality. You know, when I see a good-looking mango and somebody says, don't eat it. Why? I may protest, this mango, let me eat it. No, don't eat it. Then if I am just told, don't eat it, then all that will happen is I'll think the person who is telling me, don't eat it, that person is a killjoy. That person is a spoiler. What is this nice mango? Eat it and enjoy, man. What is this? But if somebody explains to me, actually here there is a river and what you are seeing actually it's not a mango, it's a reflection. And you look up from there, you see there is a land over there. On that there is a tree. And on that tree, there are branches. And you see there is the real mango. You can relish that mango. If you go after this, you will simply break your head. You will never get the mango. But you go up, climb up that tree, reach that mango and you eat that. You will enjoy. Makes sense. Yes. Then I will agree. Okay. I don't want this mango. I want that. So like that, if people just tell us, hey, well, I have a male form. Someone else has a female form. You know, I like that person. You like, that person likes me. Enjoy. What's wrong? No, you're not meant to enjoy. So why? You say that it's a spoiled sport. But no. Yes. We can have male-female relationship within sacred limits of dharma. But this is not the real mango. Actually, the male-female attraction in this world is a reflection of the original male-female attraction that is there in Krishna, the spiritual world. And that is not actually just a male-female attraction. That is the devotee-lord interaction. And the devotee-lord attraction is manifested in its highest expression in the Lord manifesting in a male form and the devotee manifesting in a female form. But
It is essentially spiritual, and that why that potent love is what is the real mango and what we are meant to aspire for. So when the scriptures, when they reveal to us the reality, and then she told us this is the reflection, then we can give up the reflection and move towards the reality. So it is this reality that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give us. And because Radharani's love for Krishna is supremely exalted, that's why it is considered to be the highest. Now, within the various Madhurya Rasas that are there, you know, there is the love of Lakshmi Devi for Narayan, there is a love of Sita for Lord Ram, there is a love of Rukmini Devi for Dwarkadhish. Among all these forms of conjugal love, the love of Radharani for Krishna is considered the highest. Now, all of these are supreme, but the love of Radharani for Krishna is highest because it is not Swakiya, it is Parakiya. So, Swakiya means one's own. So, in the other relationships, the two are married to each other. Because they're married to each other, there is a right, there is possession over there. And therefore, it becomes Swakiya. Now, Parakiya means that actually, for the sake of intensification of love, everything else is put aside, everything else is subordinated. So, and whatever will intensify the love is provided. So, now the love becomes more exciting, more fascinating, more captivating when there are obstacles in the love. So imagine that there are man and woman who are married to each other, but then they participate in a drama, and in that drama they are not spouses, they are paramours. So in reality they are spouses, but within the drama they are paramours. So their relationship within the drama seems to be illicit. So actually the relationship of Radha and Krishna is like that. Now they are eternally, as I said earlier, they are the same Lord, only one Lord who is manifested as two. So they eternally belong to each other. So there is in that sense nothing immoral in their relationship. But in Golok Vrindavan, for the sake of intensification of Leela, what is done is they act as paramours. So Radha and Krishna, it appears as if they are not united by wedlock. Their relationship is outside of wedlock. And by that, it appears as if it is immoral. But this is done just for the sake of drama. And what is the purpose of the drama? That heightens the excitement. That intensifies the love. So the idea is, the Vedic scriptures tell us that for the sake of love, for the sake of God, everything should be given up. For the sake of God, everything should be given up. So now we will understand at an intuitive level, at a logical level, that we should give up sin for the sake of God. So yes, we follow the regulative principles, and all the religions have some rules and regulations which forbid sinful activities at some level. So giving up the bad for the sake of God is good. It is essential. But actually, we have to give up not only the bad, but also the good for the sake of God. Then that demonstrates the purity of our love for God. So, first we give up the bad and then we become good for the sake of God. But then for the sake of God, we give up the good also. Now when we give up the good for the sake of God, that doesn't mean we descend down to bad. No, that means we rise above the good to the level of the godly. How does that happen? That happens when the devotee transcends morality for the sake of devotion. So Krishna tells this when he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. He says, give up everything for my sake. give up everything for my sake. So even give up dharma, that means give up the good for my sake also. So giving up the good for my sake means that even if morality is there, for my sake you should give up the morality. So the gopis, Radharani and other gopis, when it appears as if they're married to someone else, but they act as if they act out of the love for Krishna, then this whole setting demonstrates sarva dharman parityajya. It demonstrates how they are ready to give up everything for the sake of Krishna. And if for a woman, her chastity is considered the most prized thing. But then the gopis demonstrate that they are ready to give that up. Actually, they don't give that up. They are supremely chaste to Krishna. But within this world, when they give it up, they demonstrate sarva dharma and parityajya. So they, when they give up dharma, they don't become adharma, adharmi. They give up lower dharma for the sake of higher dharma. So this is the demonstration of the purity of their love, that they are ready to give up everything, even dharma, for the sake of Krishna. And in this way, they demonstrate their supreme love, be ready to give up everything for Krishna. So this setting of Parakiya Ras demonstrates the supremacy of love. It demonstrates how in the spiritual world, love reigns supreme. Krishna conceals his divinity and the gopis sacrifice their chastity, and all this is so that love can reign supreme. Love can reign supreme. That is the spiritual world. And it is this sublime love of Radha and Krishna which is demonstrated in many intimate pastimes in Vrindavan and especially in Radhakunda. So the obstacles to love in the spiritual world are not for the sake of, are not because there are any anti-devotional factor, forces or factors in the spiritual world. Everything there is meant to intensify the love, and even the obstacles are meant to intensify the love. It's like an elephant is very strong. It has huge strength. But when the elephant is shackled by strong shackles and the elephant is very attracted to something and wants to go there, then the elephant finds, wants to go and is shackled. So at that time the elephant pulls. And then the elephant pulls. Then the elephant, there is internal realization and external expression of the strength. The strength is there in the elephant. But there is internal realization when there are obstacles and the elephant is shackled, say, is tied by very strong ropes or strong chains to a big tree. And the elephant pulls with all its strength. So the elephant normally, if they're shackled, says, oh, I can't go there. But when it gets some very good looking food or something very attractive and wants to go there, then it pulls. And then finally the whole tree starts shaking. Then oh, I'm so strong that I can shake this tree. So there's the internal realization of the strength. And then there's also external expression. People also say, oh, this elephant is so strong, it can shake and uproot the tree also. So similarly, the love of the gopis for Krishna is unparalleled. It is immense. But when there are external obstacles, when there are obstacles to that love, then there is the internal realization of that love and there is the external expression of that love. They understand, oh, this love is so great that we are ready to give up everything for Krishna's sake. And the world sees how selfless the love of the gopis is. So, it is this love that is the sacred gift that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has brought for the world. And that Srila Prabhupada has given us through the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And Rupa Goswami is pointing us to that love. So it is that which we aspire for. And by living according to Upadeshamrut and bathing in Radhakund in this consciousness, we can attain that love. Let us look at the remaining purport. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore writes, so we discuss some of the unlimited glories and we say Radhakund can be rarely attained. That means that it has to be attained in the proper consciousness. And that consciousness takes efforts to attain.
then who can serve in Radha Kund? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, right, that those interested in advanced devotional service, and they have to follow in the wake of Sakhis and Manjaris. These are all devotees who have exalted level of selfless love for Krishna, as we discussed. And this love of Radha Krishna is so exalted that it's very difficult to understand. But we can understand it when we are under the protection of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He, through Rupa Goswami and through the Parampara, has given us a pathway to understand this. And most importantly, they should be eager to go back to Godhead. If somebody is happy just eating the reflected mango, then that person will not be looking at the other mango only, real mango. And then similar, this is a theme which has been talked about again and again by Acharya. So what does Bhaktivinoda Thakur write? He says that Radha Kund is so great that what to speak of ordinary devotees, even great devotees like Naraka or Narada or Sanaka, they find it difficult to attain Radha Kund. So only the greatly fortunate can attain it. And this attainment, as we said, is actually spiritual. So, how should we serve Radha Kund? By bathing as many times as possible. And it is the most important form of devotion. In bhakti, there can be many most importants also. There are many perfects. So, as many times as possible means, if we go get an opportunity to go to Radha Kund, we can and bathe. But the important thing is, we also have to live our rest of the rest of our life so that we cultivate the right mood by which we can bathe and benefit from there. And that's what Prabhupada talks about. I have to give up material conceptions. What are those material conceptions? Not just I am the body, but also to think that Radha and Krishna, their pastimes are material. That is also a material conception. And residing, we serve under serving maids in loving service of the Lord. So now, when we are in the Krishna conscious movement, we are also serving the spiritual master. And we are serving the Guru Parampara. And that way we are preparing our consciousness to eventually become purified and return to the spiritual world. That is the result that is offered. The result that we will get is pure love of Krishna in the wake of the gopis. So just as they were selfless, we will attain selfless love. And we can get that by bathing just once, if we do the bathing in proper consciousness. And by thus imbibing Deshamrit, we will eventually go back to Godhead and will return to the shelter of Srimati Radharani. And will serve under her supervision to be eternally happy in love with Krishna. Thank you very much. Shri Upadeshamrit ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktavinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna.